So let me welcome Federico, who will talk about all your keyboards are belong to us.
All right, thank you. So, brief introduction on me. I've had the privilege of spending nearly my entire career in open source software. And these days, I'm the product management director for Ceph at IBM, formerly Red Hat. Before that, I was the Ubuntu server PM at Canonical. And before that, I was known as the SUSE systems management czar. The talk has nothing to do with my job. I'm a manager these days. So as a former embedded developer, this is my definition of fun. I'm also the co-founder of a small R&D shop in Boston focused on sonar R&D, and this seemed like an interesting combination of sound, security, and computers. So doubly interesting. Now, the humorous obligatory disclaimer to all my talks is that we will most likely break some hardware playing with it, and it will come out of your pocket. No liability if you follow our instructions and stub your toe and bring about the end of the universe. That kind of thing. But this year, the disclaimer is of a different kind altogether. This talk is all compiled with open sources. There is no classified material here. With great power comes great responsibility. Don't do anything you should not with what you're about to hear. And don't just obey the law, but since this is a hacking talk, be nice. Let's get going. We have a ton of slides, and I don't think we're going to get to demos here, but still getting to all of this is a challenge. This talk is all about abusing our beloved keyboards. Keyboards have access to the plain text of what we are so carefully encrypting. They have access to our passwords for hashing. It follows we obviously want some exploit action. And there is some pretty wild stuff out there. One cannot hardly imagine what the big boys in the Intel community are capable of when the academics are having this much fun. Let's start with something light. Eric Hasseltine, interesting career, trained in neurology, became a Disney Imagineering executive, then was recruited by General Hayden to run the NSA's R&D department. An original career trajectory, if I ever saw one. So the first movie connection is Disney, but there is a point here. In Hasseltine's book, great book, by the way, absolutely enjoyable read if you are into tech and espionage, details the discovery of the IBM Selectric implant in typewriters in US embassies in the Eastern Bloc, among other stories. At this point here, he is talking about Charles Gandhi, the legendary NSA researcher, and how he got his start in the business. Spoiler, it's the movies. So, in the movie, FBI agents monitoring Nazi spies in America remotely beamed energy from a dish antenna at a room where the spies were planning their next attack. The intrepid FBI agents were able to decode the voice signals in the room from reflections of a vibrating speaker in a telephone headset and thwart the attack. This supposedly was in the 1940s. I still haven't figured out what movie this is. That's a research project. But that's what Gandhi said, and 11-year-old Gandhi was so impressed that he decided to become an FBI agent and defend the United States. And then the NSA didn't exist then, but 10 years later, it did. And so he became an NSA agent. There is an interesting side story about this movie because can't find it, but 1940s. The Tempest code word brings us the first attack vector. We usually call this Van Eck freaking, which is kind of a misnomer. But it's a super cool name, so I'm not advocating we move to something else. Dutch researcher Wim van Eck opened Pandora's box on EM signal emissions with his 1985 paper, publishing what SIGINT professionals had known since the 1940s, but kept classified. In the open, it was known that signal leakage existed, but everybody assumed it would be really hard to get to. Well, Van Eck demonstrated that it was actually much easier. So he actually went live on the BBC, I think this was 1985, and